So, of course, I didn't have any date, date tonight. Everybody knows that. My calendar's on the web, right? The problem is that problem, right? It is that problem. Our calendar's on the web. Our location's on the web. You have a cell phone and you have a cell phone network provider, and if your cell phone network provider is Sprint, then we can tell you that several million times last year somebody who has a law enforcement ID card in his pocket somewhere went to the Sprint website and asked for the real-time location of somebody with a telephone number and was given it. Several million times. Just like that. We know that because Sprint admits that they have a website where anybody with a law enforcement ID can go and find the real-time location of anybody with a Sprint cell phone. And we don't know that about AT&T and Verizon because they haven't told us. But that's the only reason we don't know, right? Because they haven't told us. That's a service that you think of as a traditional service, telephony. But the deal that you get with the traditional service called telephony now includes a thing you didn't know, like spying. It's not a service to you, but it's a service. And you get it for free with your service contract for telephony. Right? You get for free the service of advertising with your Gmail, which means, of course, there's another service behind, which is untouched by human hands, semantic analysis of your email. I still don't understand why anybody wants that. I still don't understand why anybody uses it, but the people do, including the very sophisticated and thoughtful people in this room. And you get free email service and some storage, which is worth exactly a penny and a half at the current price of storage. And you get spying all the time. And for free, too. And your calendar's on the web, and everybody can see whether you have a date Friday night, and you have a status, single, looking. And you get a service for free, advertising, single, looking, and spying with it for free. And it all sort of just grewed up that way, right? In the blink of an eye, and here we are. Thank you. And the idea that the network was a network of peers was hard to perceive after a while, particularly if you were, let us say, ordinary human being, that is, not a computer engineer, scientist, or researcher, not a hacker, not a geek. If you were an ordinary human being, it was hard to perceive that the underlying architecture of the net was meant to be about peerage, because the operating system software with which you interacted very strongly instantiated the idea of the server and client architecture. In fact, of course, if you think about it, it was even worse than that. The thing called Windows was a degenerate version of a thing called X Windows. It too thought about the world in a server-client architecture, but what we would now think of as backwards. The server was the thing at the human being's end, remember? That was the basic X Windows conception of the world. It served communications with human beings at the endpoints of the net to processes located at arbitrary places near the center, in the middle, or at the edge of the net. It was the great idea of Windows, in an odd way, to create a political archetype in the net which reduced the human being to the client and produced a big centralized computer, which we might have called a server, which now provided things to the human being on take-it-or-leave-it terms. They were, of course, quite take-it-or-leave-it terms. And unfortunately, everybody took it, because they didn't know how to leave once they got in. Now the net was made of servers in the center and clients at the edge. Clients had rather little power and servers had quite a lot. As storage gets cheaper, as processing gets cheaper, and as complex services that scale in ways that are hard to use small computers for, or at any rate, these aggregated collections of small computers for, the most important of which is search, as services began to populate that net, the hierarchical nature of the net came to seem like it was meant to be there. The net was made of servers and clients, and the clients were the guys at the edge representing human beings, and servers were things in the middle with lots of power and lots of data. Now, one more thing happened about that time. It didn't happen in Microsoft Windows computers, although it happened in Microsoft Windows servers, and it happened more in sensible operating systems like Unix and GNU Linux and other ones. Namely, servers kept logs. That's a good thing to do. Computers ought to keep logs. It's a very wise decision when making computer operating software to keep logs. It helps with debugging, makes efficiencies attainable. makes it possible to study the actual operations of computers in the real world. It's a very good idea. But if you have a system which centralizes servers, and the servers centralize their logs, then you are creating vast repositories of hierarchically organized data about people at the edges of the network that they do not control. And unless they are experienced in the operation of servers, will not understand the comprehensiveness of, will not understand the meaningfulness of, will not understand the aggregatability of. So we build a network out of a communications architecture designed for peering, which we defined in client-server style, which we then defined to be the disempowered client at the edge and the server in the middle. We aggregated processing and storage increasingly in the middle, and we kept the logs, that is, information about the flows of information in the net, in centralized places, far from the human beings who controlled, or at any rate thought they controlled, the operation of the computers that increasingly dominated their lives. This was a recipe for disaster. This was a recipe for disaster. haven't mentioned yet the word cloud, which I was dealt on the top of the deck when I received the news that I was talking here tonight about privacy in the cloud. I haven't mentioned the word cloud because the word cloud doesn't really mean anything very much. In other words, the disaster we are having is not the catastrophe of the cloud. The disaster we are having is the catastrophe of the way we misunderstood the net under the assistance of the unfree software that helped us to understand it. What cloud means is that servers have ceased to be made of iron. Cloud means virtualization of servers has occurred. So out here in the dusty edges of the galaxy where we live, in disempowered clienthood, nothing very much has changed. As you walk inward towards the center of the galaxy, it gets more fuzzy than it used to. We resolve now halo, where we used to see actual stars, you know, servers with switches and buttons you can push and such. Instead, what has happened, of course, is that iron no longer represents a single server. Iron is merely a place where servers could be. And so cloud means servers have gained freedom. Freedom to move, freedom to dance, freedom to combine and separate and reaggregate and do all kinds of tricks. Servers have gained freedom. Clients have gained nothing. Welcome to the cloud. It's a minor modification of the recipe for disaster. It improves the operability of systems that control the clients out there who were meant to be peers in a net made of equal things. So that's the architecture of the catastrophe. If you think about it, each step in that architectural evolution away from a network made of peers to servers that serve the communication with human beings, to clients, which are programs running on heavy iron, to clients, which are the computers that people actually use in a fairly disempowered state, and servers are high concentration of powers in the net, to servers are virtual processes running in clouds of iron at the center of an increasingly hot galaxy, and the clients are out there in the dusty spiral arms. All of those decisions architecturally were made without any discussion of the social consequences long term. Part of our general difficulty in talking about the social consequences of technology during the great period of invention of the internet, done by computer scientists who weren't terribly interested in sociology, social psychology, or, with a few shining exceptions, freedom. So we got an architecture which was very subject to misuse. Indeed, it was in a way begging to be misused. And now we are getting the misuse that we set up. Because we have thinned the clients out further and further and further. In fact, we made them mobile. We put them in our pockets and we started strolling around with them. There are a lot of reasons for making clients disempowered, and there are even more reasons for disempowering the people who own the clients and who might quaintly be thought of as the people who ought to control them. If you think for just a moment how many people have an interest in disempowering the clients that are the mobile telephones, you will see what I mean. There are many overlapping rights owners, as they think of themselves, each of whom has a stake in disempowering a client at the edge of the network to prevent particular hardware from being moved from one network to another, to prevent particular hardware from playing music not bought at the great monopoly of music in the sky, to disable competing video delivery services in favor of new chips I founded myself that won't run popular video standards, good or bad. There are a lot of business models that are based around mucking with the control over client hardware and software at the edge to deprive the human being who has quaintly thought that she purchased it from actually occupying the position that capitalism says owners are always in, that is, of total control. Given the one-way nature of links in the web and other elements of the data architecture that we are now also living with, that's another talk, another time, search is not a thing that we can easily distribute. The power in the market of our friends at Google depends entirely on the fact that search is not easily distributed. It is a complex service that must be centrally organized and centrally delivered. It must crawl the web in a unilateral direction, link by link, figuring out where everything is in order to help you find it when you need it. And in order to do that, at least so far, we have not evolved good algorithmic and delivery structures for doing it in a decentralized way. So search becomes a archetypal complex service, and it draws onto itself a business model for its monetization. Advertising in the 20th century was a random activity. You threw things out and hoped they worked. Advertising in the 21st century is an exquisitely precise activity. You wait for a guy to want something